Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Yes, it's Friday at 3 p.m. That can mean only one thing. Movies and Booze, the iconic radio slot. I was going to say something else, but it's an iconic radio slot going for nearly as long as this station has been going. And I, for one, am delighted to be hosting this part of the show where I get to talk about movies, drink beer, talk about showbiz. As I said last time, if we could just get Everton's 1995 victory up on the TV there and maybe some Bruce Springsteen playing, I'd never need to leave this studio again. My children could come and visit, you know, my wife could send a postcard or whatever, but I would be perfectly happy. I'm joined by Chris Wasser, movie aficionado, arts journalist, Dean McGuinness, the MD of Premier International Beers, and Aisling Bonner, who is the presenter of the breakfast show on Spin.
Yeah,
thank you for coming down. You're busy.
I was up early.
I figured you were, so I appreciate you coming in.
No problem.
For this, before we get to all that, I'm going to finish out the text from the last hour. We were talking about weddings and wedding faux pas. Weddings are the work of the devil and should be avoided at all costs. That's from Brian, possibly unhappy fellow, who writes to us from Dublin. And to end things out, you know what annoys me about weddings? Being invited. That's Eddie. So a lot of the listeners quite down on marriage at the moment, but we will move to nicer things, beer, showbiz and movies. And talking of movies and booze, next week, Friday, August 30th, the Moncrief Movies and Booze Show is going to be live from the Dublin Royal Convention Centre in the heart of Dublin City. You can look forward to all the usual crack and capers. Thanks to Marks and Spencers as Sean sits down with the Movie and Booze panel gang to help you choose the perfect wine, films and showbiz, alongside some fantastic live music guests to help kickstart your weekend. To be part of the audience, simply register now at newstalk.com/events. They do go fast, so register now. It is free, but you need to register. It is strictly over 18s because there is alcohol, so you will need proof on the day. So go to newstalk.com/events for next week's Movies and Booze in Dublin Royal Convention Centre. That's all next week. So, Dean, tell me just at the start, what are we sampling today? There's an East Coast, West Coast vibe. I've always wanted to say that.
We are tasting two IPAs.
Right.
So I'm just back from the States and I got to taste some beers that are really, really hard to get your hands on. They were brewed for Disney by Terrapin, a brewery, and they are Star Wars themed.
Oh, brilliant.
So I'm figuring if people in America can brew beers from Planet Batu and Planet Mustafar, then Irish people are perfectly entitled to brew American IPAs.
Absolutely. But you've brought in two Irish ones.
Two Irish IPAs. Yeah, we've got a New England IPA from Rascals, which is brewed in collaboration with three New York breweries, and then Whiplash, a West Coast IPA.
Oh, wonderful.
So we're kind of covering both sides of the US.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to talking about those. Aisling, what's in showbiz news?
We're going to talk about the latest Irish actress to join new film D-Day, which is our new film about D-Day called Pressure.
Okay.
That is also starring Andrew Scott. That's going to be in the works soon. An awkward moment for Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis trailer, which is a bit of crack. And then kind of the ongoing drama with the It Ends With Us film starring Blake Lively. It's a murky old one.
Yeah, you can tell us all about that because that is very, very murky. And Chris, the movie's up for a delicatessen or something this week.
Or something, the films we'll be looking at today are Mrs. Robinson, Aoife Kelleher's profile documentary of Ireland's first female president, former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights as well. And we're also going to be looking at something very different, which is Till Singer's Cuckoo. It's a horror film with Hunter Schafer. And it also features my favourite imperfect horror actor. That's his official title now, according to me, Dan Stevens. Whenever I see Dan Stevens' name in anything, I'm like, sold. I will watch this.
Second name drop of today's show. I'm allowed one an hour. I spoke to him a few years ago.
You did?
And it was all going very well. And then I brought up Downton Abbey and I could just the air left his face and his hair and everything, you know. I've seen Mrs. Robinson as well. I'm looking forward to chatting about that. I think they mistitled it though because everyone keeps thinking of The Graduate. And I think when you Google Mrs. Robinson, The Graduate
comes up.
It's
bad for Google searches.
Yeah, it's bad for Google searches. Anyway, we will get into all of this good stuff. If you want to get in touch about anything we're talking about, just to remind you, 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. Dean, can we start with our first beer then from Rascal? was in Inchy Core, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. Yeah, both Dublin breweries today. And yeah, this is a New England IPA. So that's kind of one of the newest styles of beer that have come about. IPA is an old style. The original IPA is credited to a guy called George Hodgson in the Bow Brewery in London.
Mm. And IPA stands for?
IPA stands for India Pale Ale.
Yeah.
So it was a name that was given to the style maybe 30, 40, 50 years after it became more popular. George Hodgson brewed the beer, and it was a beer that was very popular in the Indian colonies.
Yeah.
And it is a style of beer that survives well when it travels because it's got a lot of hop content, which gives a kind of a bactericide effect in the beer, and also typically above average in terms of the alcohol content. Now, with a New England IPA, in America, when you get a style, as soon as you've got a style that's established, an IPA is by far and away the most popular style of craft beer in the States. American breweries like to work out ways of stretching the style in different ways.
Yeah.
So it's a pale ale, so it should be golden in colour.
Okay.
American brewers have done black IPAs, red IPAs, brown IPAs, rye IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
They've done India Pale Lagers, changing it from an ale to a lager. They've done sour IPAs,
yeah,
by changing the fermentation. But what I think is one of the most clever, the centre of the IPA is hop character,
right?
Flavour from hops. And what's clever with the New England IPA is that they have really focused on hop character, but changed the way that the hop gives flavour to beer.
Okay.
There's two types of flavours you get from hops. One is when they add hops early on in the boil. There is a substance called alpha acid in hops, and that converts into isoalpha acid, which is a bitter substance, and you get a bitter flavour from it. The second way you get flavour from hops is from essential oils in hops, and you can get floral flavours, perfumey flavours, fruity flavours, sometimes earthy herbal flavours. Mm-hmm. With New England IPAs, what they've done is they've just infused a huge amount of fruity flavour,
yeah,
from essential oils in the hops by adding lots of dry
in case
hops.
People have never heard this slot before, all my guests have the aforementioned Rascals IPA, the New England one, in front of us. It smells very fruity.
Incredibly fruity, yeah. Peach is the classic flavour that you get. And with this, there's a lot of peach, tropical fruit flavours, a certain amount of strawberry, apple with it.
It's nice.
It's got beautifully velvety mouthfeel. It's quite rich, medium bodied. And
Aisling?
You know, I brushed my teeth just before I came here.
Well, I appreciate that.
So I wouldn't recommend that as a precursor, but it is, it's very light.
Yeah.
And fruity.
What percentage is it, Dean?
6% ABV.
Ooh, wow,
so,
okay.
Yeah. With classic American IPAs, India Pale Ales, IPAs, the range of ABV is typically about 5.5% to 7.5%.
So it's not the type of beer, we were talking about weddings earlier, like you can't sit around drinking this all day. It wouldn't be advised.
Yeah. Now, funny enough, when I was in the States, what's interesting in the States is that when you're kind of travelling around, in Ireland, a lot of the mainstream beers, they've reduced the alcohol content. So, for example, Budweiser or Heineken typically is about 5% on the continent, but 4.3% in Ireland. In Ireland, we also have 20% pints that are 20% bigger than the US. An American pint is 473 milliliters. Ours is 568 milliliters. So we do have a kind of a session culture where you drink a pint, and we're used to kind of 4.3%. This is almost 50% higher than that. But when you're in the States, it's not unusual, as a matter of course, to get beers at 8, 9, 10, 12%.
Because their society is used to people not drinking as much.
It's, well, yeah, I suppose a lot of craft beer drinkers would drink beer like you would drink wine.
Yeah.
But the big thing is that the tax in Ireland is huge, and it's directly related to alcohol content. So as you increase the alcohol content in Ireland, the price goes up through the roof.
Okay. Chris, have you had a slurp?
I thought it was delicious. Peachy.
Yeah,
it was just peachy.
Absolutely. Much like yourself. Is that inappropriate? Can you say that? I'm not sure what you can say. You're fine with it, though, aren't you?
Today,
you're okay with it.
It's okay. We know each other.
Dean, forgive me if you've been asked these questions a load of times by Sean and other people, but the session IPAs that you see, that's when it's demarcated session. It's almost for people who want to drink plenty of it, right?
Yeah, basically what they have done, I mentioned that they stretch the IPA styles in a few different ways.
Yeah.
So they've stretched in terms of colour, they've stretched in terms of fermentation profile. They've also stretched in terms of alcohol strength.
Yeah.
So session IPA is typically around 3% up to 5.5%. A classic IPA is typically about 5.5 to 7.5%. And then once you go above 7.5%, you're into what they call a double IPA, which is IIPA, the first I being Imperial IPA.
When
you see Imperial on a beer, that usually means higher alcohol content. But yeah, session literally means a session.
Yeah. And I see more and more, because I enjoy the occasional craft beer, I see more and more 440 cans. Is this a way for them to make more money or for us to drink less?
Well, I suppose there's two ways of looking at it. You could say that it's a more generous 330 milliliter serve, or you could say that
it's not priced that way though.
You could say it's a slightly smaller 500 milliliter serve. As a rule of thumb, when there's something a little bit stronger, they try to reduce the serve size of it. So in the States, if you're drinking an Imperial Russian Stout or something like that, they'll give it to you in a snifter, like a brandy glass.
Yeah.
But with, 440 is kind of a way of having something that's comparable to a 500 milliliter, but if the ABV is going up a bit, it brings the quantity of beer that you're drinking down a little bit.
Okay. And again, you've probably been asked this a lot, but in terms of the non-alcoholic market, are they doing non-alcoholic IPAs these days?
They are, yeah. Yeah, there is an awful lot more non-alcoholic beers out there. The technology for making non-alcoholic beers has improved massively. Mm. It used to be that the alcohol was effectively cooked out of the beer.
Yeah.
So alcohol has a lower boiling point than water does. So they would literally evaporate off the alcohol. The problem with that is, if you're evaporating off alcohol, if you have any oxygen at all that has made it into the beer, that oxygen will get cooked into the beer and it'll come through as different types of flavours. Initially, it'll come through as a flavour that is politely termed Ribes, but is commonly known as cat pee. I don't know who drank the cat pee to find out that cat pee tastes like Ribes. Ribes, it sounds like Ribena, so it's kind of blackcurrant leaves is the flavour.
Don't they say that certain Chardonnays smell of cat pee, though?
Yes, yeah, you can get it. It's an oxidation flavour, and it can be quite a pleasant flavour. The name could be improved, but it's quite a pleasant flavour.
This sounds terribly middle class, but I was actually on a wine tour in Hungary. We were talking about Hungary yesterday, and we were given this white wine, I think it was a Chardonnay, and it was indistinguishable, the smell, from cat pee. I remember it as long as I live. It was like, sorry, I think a cat has urinated in your wine. It was so, but the wine was actually delicious.
Yeah.
There you go. Sorry, off topic there. The cats urinating in wine bottles.
But when you take oxidation a bit further, then it can taste like newspaper. So literally like smelling a newspaper, or the thing that I associate with is if you go into a kind of a seaside toilet and there's loads of empty toilet rolls in there and the smell of that cardboard in the toilet roll.
Okay.
When they were boiling out the oxygen, you tended to get those flavours in it. Now they can take out the alcohol. Now when they're taking out the alcohol, they can do it by filtration, and they can also do some clever things in terms of the way that they're brewing it in Brunei's.
And just to clarify, we have been drinking Rascal's New England IPA. So is there a discernible taste between East Coast and West Coast? I know we're going to do a West Coast IPA, but there is a distinct difference between the two of them, right?
Yeah, both in terms of time scale as to when the styles emerged, and also in terms of the flavour.
Right.
So with this, you're looking much more fruit flavour and quite distinctively peachy fruit flavour. With West Coast IPA, the classic flavour that you get is pine and citrus.
Okay.
And then you usually have, the example that we have today is relatively low in bitterness. Both of them are quite comparable in bitterness, but the classic for a West Coast IPA would be that the bitterness would be a bit higher.
Okay.
So the bitterness, which is a flavour that you get at the back of your tongue, it tends to be quite assertive.
Well, let's see what happens with the West Coast one, but I really enjoyed that Rascal's New England IPA. Aishling, it seems Saoirse Ronan's star continues to rise, because the movie isn't out until September, I think, but there's already Oscar buzz for her latest venture, The Outrun.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. And just today, Variety, that US entertainment publication, has
Bible.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of the gods on all things Oscars. You know, they do that famous after party and all. Yeah. And they have tipped her for another Oscar nomination. I think that would be her fifth Oscar nom if she does get the nod. And she is the lead in The Outrun. It's out in cinemas here on the 27th of September. And she's playing a recovering addict. It's set in Scotland. And she's working with her now husband as well, who's a big Scot, like a very proud Scotsman.
Yeah, I read the book and it's set in the Orkney Islands.
Yes.
I read the book because I got it free at a press thing. And she, apparently this has been a real pet project of hers and it looks beautiful. I saw a trailer for it.
Yeah, it looks amazing. She looks amazing in it. I'm a big fan of hers. And she's been doing a good bit of press. Apparently she learned how to deliver lambs in for the film.
Wow.
And they're kind of like very big on promoting like Scottish talent. But also in the Variety news today, the NECAP film has also been tipped as getting the nomination for Best International Film. It's obviously been put forward as Ireland's representative in that category, and they think it's going to go all the way and get a nom.
Wow.
Which would be amazing.
The life that movie is having and continuing to have. Have you seen it?
I actually haven't seen it, but I'm due to see it this weekend. Yeah. I did go see the lads at Electric Picnic at the weekend.
And how was that?
They're fantastic. Yeah. Like I love them. I think they're brilliant. And the film has gotten nothing but rave reviews. I know you were talking about it recently,
yeah,
Chris, on this.
Don't let him in yet. I'm refusing to let him in. Only joke. Can I just go down a quick rabbit hole with you? Electric Picnic.
Yeah, go.
No, I've been. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no, I mean,
we're talking about purposes.
I've
been several times.
No, go down the rabbit hole.
No, EP, how did you find it this year?
Oh, fantastic. I'm still recovering from...
we can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, you can.
Did you do all 3 days?
I did all 3 days and like...
Camping, camper van, fancy hotel, what was it?
No, pure tent on the grass. Okay. And like the trooper that I am, I went to Kylie Minogue and I came in and did my breakfast radio show.
Which starts at what time?
At 7 a.m. on Monday
good
morning.
Heavens.
Yeah. Pat me on the back.
Fair play to you.
Yeah, but she was worth it.
Yeah, and those dulcet tones of yours, were they particularly down and dirty?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Imahe on Sunday. They were completely gone. I had to lip sync to Kylie Minogue, which is actually a crime.
Yeah, and was the Kylie gig, was it Interstellar? I've heard mixed things about it. Some people say, yeah, it was fine. Other people thought it was just, you know, life-changing.
There was a good bit at the start where she did a lot of kind of album tracks that only the real kind of Kylie stans would have known. But then kind of about halfway through, she kicked into a lot of the older ones and the bangers, and we were all happy out then.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. And did she do Can't Get You Out of My Head? Yeah.
She did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Excellent. Mission accomplished.
Most important.
Well, that rabbit hole wasn't too bad. I've gone down a lot worse in the last 2 days. A text in, Saoirse Ronan is well overdue an Oscar, guys. Chris, I was only joking about not bringing you in. It's fair to say she's overdue an Oscar, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I saw The Outrun earlier in the year, and it's extraordinary. She's the best she's ever been in it.
Wow.
100%. Wow. Which is so odd to say about Saoirse Ronan, who has 4 Oscar nominations and has those beautiful performances behind her. But she will certainly get the nomination. I just don't know who's coming up ahead now. I don't know which actors and actresses at the minute are going to, are on.
It's early days.
Yeah, it's very early to call that. But I would be surprised if she doesn't get the nomination for it.
Yeah. And just, Ashley, back to you very quickly. The whole thing about her wedding, and it seemed to be like, you know, hands off my private life, which absolutely fair play to her. But she'd been married a while and it just kind of came out. So there was like this is the antithesis of a hello wedding, it seems, right?
Yeah, I think so. And now that they're obviously kind of promo in the movie, they're quite like, they're becoming a bit more public together as well. So I don't know. Maybe they were like, we better just cough on here because we're going to have to do all this promo together.
Indeed, indeed. Well, if you've just tuned in, this is John Fardy filling in for Sean. We are looking at movies, beer and showbiz news. And after the break, Chris Wasser will be telling us all about Mrs. Robinson.
I remember spending a lot of time looking out this window. I would look out on the river from my bedroom and dream dreams. There were dreams about making life fairer.
Mary is the most indefatigable woman I have ever met.
This strong, feisty, spirited person that goes in and fights for people that need support.
I'm not sure anybody can keep up with her. She must be Irish.
There comes a time where an individual has to take a stand and be prepared to pay a price for taking that stand.
Mrs. Robinson there, which is on general release, getting quite a wide release on the 23rd of August. Chris, is this a standard documentary, beginning, middle and end?
Sort of, yeah.
Even though Mary Robinson's very much alive, her life up till now.
Yeah, like a lot of people have been saying, like her story is not yet over. I don't think Mary Robinson will ever retire. You know, she's still like an activist and still works full time, you know, for on climate justice campaigns and as part of Project Dandelion and as part of a group, The Elders, of Peter Gabriel and Richard Branson, as you just heard there, sort of a group of very powerful, influential figures who are doing the best to make the world a better place. Yeah. But this film focuses on the early days, and there's it covers an awful lot in 94 minutes. And I think that's probably, this is a very good film, but that's probably the first problem. How do you tell Mary Robinson's story in 94 minutes? Because Mary Robinson's story is not really just hers. It's the story of contemporary Ireland. And of all the, I mean, even if you were to just look at Mary Robinson's presidential campaign in 1990 and everything that happened after she got in, you know, the decriminalisation of homosexuality, the lift on the divorce ban. Mm-hmm. It was just an Ireland that was just changing so rapidly in the years where she was in charge. So that's an awful lot to bite off in 90 minutes. But we've got Aoife Kelleher telling the story, and she's quite an accomplished filmmaker and documentarian. She gave us 1 Million Dublers, remember that? Mm-hmm. It was quite lovely. Strange Occurrences in a Small Irish Village.
Yeah.
Just, you know, a very good filmmaker and well able for something like this. But there were times where I was watching it where I was thinking, this would have made for a good miniseries. You know, if you were to actually tackle it.
Like a six-parter?
Yeah, maybe even a three or four-parter, because it does, and it actually, look, it actually does have a good framing device. You know, it does start with, you heard in the clip there, Mary goes back to, and she's telling her own story in her own words. Mm. That makes all the difference.
Absolutely. You this know? Isn't a third-hand one. This is her front and centre.
It's sort of a lengthy interview, but also, you know, a guide. It's almost as though she's a tour guide of her own history. And she literally goes back to her home. She goes back to her childhood bedroom. She looks out the window and she says, this is where our dreams, and that should tell you that we're actually going to go back there.
Yeah.
And we get to see, you know, never before seen family home videos of when she was, you know, surrounded by her siblings, surrounded by her folks, went off to study law in Trinity, became one of the few students, one of the few female students in the 1960s to go and study at Harvard Law School, which is just unheard of at the time. Then we get to see how this friendship that she had with this rebellious cartoonist and also solicitor Nick Robinson, that just changed everything for Mary Burke. It changed, you know, who her friends were. It changed how her life would go. In the end, it changed her name. Mm. And it also touches on the fact that her parents weren't, they did not approve of that partnership at the beginning.
And they don't go to her wedding.
Sad. We don't dwell on that. If there's, you know, there are a few flaws of this documentary. One of them is that when it touches on something interesting, it's almost as though you can hear the filmmakers looking at their watches and going, oh, we need to move on. And that's okay, because it is trying to cover a lot. But as I said, miniseries format would have been great. You could get an entire film out of the presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Watching all that stuff is just brilliant. It's just a super reminder of how things in the country in the late 1980s needed to change. And it's so good as well to watch how those Fianna Fáil boys, they thought they had that in the bag. Mm. And then everything that happened with Brian Lenihan, and just that extraordinary archive footage of that inauguration when Mary Robinson is signing herself in and her presidency is beginning, and you can practically see the steam coming out of Hawley's ears. It's just, he knows that these are his final days. So all of that stuff is really good. What separates it, I think, from other profiles that just want to celebrate the central figure is that it does actually ask critical questions, and it isn't afraid to say, well, these are the mistakes you made.
I was going to get that. There's a text in, the Mary Robinson thing sounds like the most laughable, oozing, gluttonous, uncritical, how do you say that word, hero worship, hagiography, I'm going to call it hero worshipping of all time. Does it even say a single comma that was critical of her?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So
that's from James in Cabra. Thank you, James.
Well, James in Cabra, I think the thing that annoys an awful lot of people about the end of Mary Robinson's presence, tenure as president, was that she essentially walked out before she was supposed to. She left the post 3 months early. And that was because she didn't go for the second term. There's an awful lot in there about how, you know, she talked and even argued with Nick about whether or not she should go for a second term, decided against it, saw that a position was opening up in the UN as High Commissioner for Human Rights, and said, that is, you know, the president was the dream job. Here's the next one.
Mm.
The only thing is, Kofi Annan, who was the UN Secretary General at the time, said, I need you in September. She was supposed to be president until December. That created a bit of tension, because you're not supposed to walk out on your presidency. So that left a sour taste. Here, it addresses that. It looks into it. And she says, essentially, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest one is the Princess Latifah. Mm-hmm. You know, the Dubai Sheikh Latifah, who was essentially being held captive by her father at the time. And Mary Robinson was not aware of this and was sort of tricked and misled to believe that she was invited to this family lunch in Dubai, and she had lunch with Latifah, and she came out afterwards and said to BBC News, who had been reporting on, you know, suspicious, allegedly suspicious behaviour, and the fact that Latifah might, you know, she had tried to leave Dubai, she was captured and brought back by her father, that this poor woman wasn't being treated well. Mm. But that wasn't the information that Mary Robinson had, and at the time she described her as a troubled young woman to the BBC.
Yeah.
That did not go well.
No.
The documentary, though a little bit confusing on the matter, it approaches that, it explains that, and, yeah, and it has Mary Robinson again saying, I was wrong. And I think that's good for a documentary like this to have.
This is your slot. I just, I really like this because I saw it as well. And, you know, it's like Mary Robinson. She's a wonderful woman and sacred cow. And you feel like Eamon Dunphy said, you know, good present, not a great present or whatever. But it's a wonderful documentary. Is there any need to see it in the cinema? And I hate even saying that because I'm a big fan of the cinema.
I know what you mean. There were times where I was watching it and thinking this might actually be on television within 6 months.
Yeah.
And it
is it because they want an international audience?
I think it's that idea of getting everyone together and having that communal experience of watching and, you know, watching Irish history unfold in groups. You know, it is nice that it actually has that cinematic release, but it never really fully embraces the medium.
Mm.
You know, maybe not the way that I want it.
Yeah.
I wanted it to do a little bit more visually.
Yeah. Car chase for Chris.
No, but I mean, you can. I think the other documentaries have shown that even when telling stories about political figures or subjects like these, you know, you can do something interesting. You can be inventive with how it looks. I think its biggest flaw again is just that it tries to cram in way too much.
Dean, is this something you go and see in the cinema?
Yeah, I think it's great. Something I don't think we appreciate is how progressive and at the same time backward Ireland has been at different times. You've got the American election going on now, Kamala Harris going for election, and first female president in the US. We're way ahead of them. At the same time, I was over in the States chatting to a guy who was a Trump supporter, and he was talking about, you know, whether America should allow abortion. And as well, going back in the 80s, Ireland didn't allow condoms. She was a huge campaigner to get that changed. And he was kind of at a point where, you know, how dare the American government say that abortion be legal? And I said, well, right, okay, yeah, they were also not saying that condoms were legal back in the time. And he was kind of, oh, hang on a second, you can't have that. And I said, well, you know,
that's a good point. Yeah. Aisling, is this something you'd spend your hard-earned money on?
Definitely, but I know what you mean about it going to the cinema. It wouldn't feel like something that you would kind of watch in the cinema, but I think somebody who wasn't alive during her presidency, I think
she says that apologising looking at me.
I'm so sorry to rub it in. I really would be interested to see like all those changes unfold in Ireland, and like she's just such a trailblazer, so I'd definitely give it a look.
And still is. So Chris, I'm not sure if we do this on Movies and Booze, but I'm going to do it. Stars.
I think I'll go for four. Yeah.
Four stars. That's wonderful.
Pretty
four
good.
Stars for Mrs.
Again,
four out of five,
four
right?
Four out of just, five, yeah.
Like and 27. Again,
it makes all the difference that Mary's telling her own story. Yes. And she is quite a commanding, charismatic storyteller. So,
There is a text in saying, can I see this outside of Dublin? I presume it's in places like...
Oh, Nationwide, generally.
Yeah, it's getting a big release, and I think that's the point. Aisling, staying with movies, Kerry Condon has joined the hottest actor in town, Andrew Scott, in a D-Day film.
Yeah, so this is exciting. I'm a big fan of Kerry Condon. She was obviously nominated for an Oscar in The Banshees of Inisherin. Currently watching her in popping up here and there in Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
So I can attest she does a good American accent.
She does.
And I believe she's going to be playing an American character in this film. It's going to be called Pressure. It's a film about the 72 hours leading up to D-Day, and it'll star Andrew Scott and Brendan Fraser. So it'll be a big one. Brendan Fraser's going to play Dwight D. Eisenhower, who at the time was the Allied Supreme Commander before he was president.
Right.
And Kerry is going to play his chief trusted aide, Kay Summersby, Captain Kay Summersby. Mm. And then Andrew Scott plays the Britain's chief meteorological officer, James Stagg, who you mightn't think would be kind of on a par with the Allied Supreme Commander.
No.
But his role was extremely important at that time because it was his job to decide if the weather conditions were right for the invasion of Normandy.
Oh, okay.
So I think the title of the film, Pressure, is very much referring to the pressure on him to kind of like say when was the right time to go. And then obviously Eisenhower having to make the final call.
Yeah.
So it sounds really interesting.
It does, absolutely. A text in saying, great to see Irish actors like Kerry Condon, Andrew Scott and Saoirse Ronan having such success in Hollywood. That's from Sarah in Cork. Absolutely. And that's called Pressure, right? Yeah. Not to be mistaken with the Billy Joel song from the Nylon Curtain, which Michael Quilligan will fire any minute now if I ask. But we won't get into that now. Then this is fascinating. So what's going on with Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis. There you go.
It's a tricky one. Yeah, so this is really awkward. And quite funny. So Francis Ford Coppola has this mega film coming out.
The clue's in the title.
Yeah, Megalopolis. It is self-funded to the tune of 120 million, I think.
So he's the sole investor.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. He's of course known for directing The Godfather.
Never heard of it.
Apocalypse Now. But this is why we're talking about these, because this trailer came out for Megalopolis the other day,
yeah,
and it was very quickly withdrawn by Lionsgate because it included these quotes from reviewers of his past films that were all fake. So a quote flashed up, say, for example, from this reviewer, Andrew Saris of The Village Voice, and he was reviewing The Godfather back in the day, and it said, a sloppy, self-indulgent movie. Another quote was from Rex Reed of the Daily News, and he said Apocalypse Now was an epic piece of trash. And then the kind of narration over these quotes is, genius is often misunderstood. So they're kind of like trying to pretend that everybody hated all his old movies.
Okay.
But now looking back, they're so iconic and amazing. But actually, their reviews were actually really good at the time. And the quotes are all fabricated.
So they're entirely fabricated quotes about old movies, yeah, that he's playing over this unpronounceable new movie.
Which is completely irrelevant. They didn't need to even include that. I don't know what, they were obviously trying to make some sort of point, but it's been very embarrassing.
And was it his idea?
Not sure. Okay. So Lionsgate are distributing it or whatever, and they put out an apology. They said, we screwed up, we're sorry. Mm. And they did apologise to him in the statement, which made me think maybe it wasn't. They kind of said it was an oversight on their behalf, but very confusing as to how that happened.
Yeah, but I mean, he must have had some hand or actor part in it.
You
can't help thinking, I don't want to trouble News Talk's defamation lawyers or anything, but it sounds like he was somewhere involved.
I don't know what like intern would have decided to do that without his permission or his say-so. So yeah, very embarrassing.
What's the movie Megalopolis? I still can't pronounce it. Maybe it's that IPA. But what's it about?
It's a weird sort of sci-fi film. It's set in this kind of imagined USA, which is called New Rome. Mm-hmm. And this visionary architect who's being played, I think, by Adam Driver, called Caesar, is clashing with the corrupt mayor Cicero on how to rebuild New Rome after a devastating disaster. It's like what do they call that? Something featured cast, or there's tons of actors in it.
Okay.
And it sounds absolutely mad. I don't think it did well in the film festivals that
ensemble.
It was.
Ensemble.
Yeah.
Ensemble cast. Thank you. Yeah.
It took me a while.
He's one of those guys who just gets whoever he wants because he's Francis Ford Coppola. But it's done the festival circuit or some circuit and getting bad reviews.
People said it was wacky.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It played in Cannes. And the best story I heard from Cannes was that somebody got up and went to the loo, because it is quite long, went into the loo, and there was someone in the loo just standing there, a critic, just going, I just came in for a rest. I just can't deal with it. Apparently it's all over the place.
Okay. Well, I would tell you what the film was called, but I can't pronounce it. The latest Francis Ford Coppola movie hitting a screen somewhere soon. Lots more. Well, one more beer.
Okay. So our second beer is called Note to Self. It's from Whiplash, another Dublin brewery. And this is a West Coast IPA. Now, there's an interesting statistic on hops. So IPAs are all centred around the use of hops, which is a plant that's a relative of the cannabis plant without the properties that you normally associate with cannabis. And in the US, I know this stat is from a number of years ago, about 60% of the hops are being used by craft brewers. And craft brewers are brewing about 10% of the beers. So they're brewing literally 50% more than the mainstream brewers are, but only brewing 1/9 the quantity of beer.
Okay.
So there's about 10 to 15 times more hops in craft beers on average in the States than there is in mainstream beers.
Wow.
Now, in terms of flavour, again, two ways that comes through. One is either in bitterness, which is a balancing flavour, and the other is in that either fruity or floral flavour that comes through from the essential oils. With a classic West Coast IPA, what you're looking at is usually a bit more bitterness. Now, this one is quite restrained in its bitterness. There is about 20, 25 IBUs in it, which is quite low.
Yeah, not very bitter from the sip I've had.
Yep. And then the hop character is the classic hop character for West Coast IPAs is the hop character that you associate with Cascade or Centennial hops, which is a citrusy flavour, which comes through as kind of lemon-lime flavour in this. And then a certain amount of pine. Again, the pine is quite restrained. There's a little bit of white pepper flavour in it as well, giving an amount of balance.
Okay.
And you were talking about session IPAs. This is one that sits just in the middle. It's 5% ABV. So it's at the lower end of a classic IPA and at the upper end of a session IPA. A session IPA would be kind of 3.5 up to 5%. But yeah, it's this would be the style that would have been popularized when American IPAs first came about. So when breweries like Sierra Nevada and Widmer on the west coast of the US, Russian River started brewing IPAs, this is the style that they...
Mild and tasty, Aisling?
Yeah, pretty mild, yeah. I wouldn't be big on IPA myself, but that's definitely drinkable.
It's a very, very drinkable beer. Now, the aroma holds very well in the beer. So they've got that good lemon-lime flavour that, like, as I was tasting it, I noticed that it was sustaining.
I can't get any pepper in it, but...
It's a kind of a balancing flavour. It'd be a white pepper flavour, which is the kind of softer type of pepper.
Chris?
Flavor.
No, it's lovely. It kind of reminds me of when I used to put a drop of lime in, like, a lager or something, you know? It's delicious. Yeah.
Okay. You used to put lime in your lager?
Yeah, you know, like, my wadi lime, like, not just the lime, like,
Notions, huh?
Cordial,
yeah.
Do you still do that?
No, I don't, because the look on everyone's face. There, I won't be doing it.
Well, listen, at least you know about movies. And your second movie is Cuckoo.
How would you like to come work for me at the resort? This happens sometimes. You look like you don't belong here.
Why is there nobody working the reception after 10?
I want you to lock the doors and wait for me. I will come pick you up right now.
A clip there from Cuckoo. Chris, I haven't seen this. You have, obviously, a trippy German horror.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, German / American horror, I suppose, bringing the German into it is the fact that it is set in the German Alps and it's made by a German filmmaker named Tilman Singer, who is making quite a name for himself with horror cinema, but this is my introduction to his work. And it's not a bad one. Full of great ideas. It's just the execution sometimes is not as solid as I wanted it to be. But we have basically this teenager, Gretchen is her name. She's played by Hunter Schafer, and she has gone to live with her dad and her stepmom because her biological mom is just not on the scene anymore. And she's not too happy about it. She's quite moody. She's quite musical. She's got a band at home. She's got a life at home. So she's not really interested in moving out of America into the German Alps. And the reason she's gone to the German Alps is because her dad is an architect, and he has been enlisted by an old pal to expand upon this really gaudy holiday resort in the Alps. That pal being Dan Stevens' character, Horror Koenig. Dan Stevens here is showing off with his German, as he did in, remember I'm Your Man a few years ago? Wonderful little sci-fi in which he played an android. It is every bit as entertaining as that description sounds.
He's
speaking fluent German here, yeah. And you can tell from the minute he wanders in, this guy cannot be trusted. This guy has clearly got something going on. Poor Gretchen will find out because she thinks she's in for, you know, a very boring, uneventful few weeks. That, you know, while the family are basically planning and designing and building this resort, they have to live in the resort town. So straight away, spooky goings on. And Gretchen's going to have a front row seat to those spooky goings on because she gets a job. Koenig gives her a job working the reception and late at night in the main lobby. And there she starts to see, you know, the females at the resort, they just start having seizures suddenly at any point during the day. They're throwing up in the lobby. She keeps encountering this weird stalker screaming woman in the woods. There's a traumatized police officer staying in the hotel who whispers something about something that happened to his wife the last time they were there. I don't want to give too much away, but I will say that there's a reason why it's called Cuckoo, and it has nothing to do with the behaviour of everyone. It's actually something to do with mad experiments that are happening here, and that Gretchen is not in for a boring summer. She's actually in for the scariest summer of her life.
Okay, it sounds complicated and weird. Yeah, but good complicated and weird.
It's sometimes funny, but unfortunately it's frequently sloppy. Okay. And I stayed with it for the first hour because I thought, so many ideas, they all have to come together in the third act. Unfortunately, they don't. You know, it does that thing that an awful lot of overhyped horrors are doing this year. I really do think this is the year of the imperfect horror. And it does, it follows the same path as its studio sibling Longlegs did a few weeks ago, where it just overextends and overexplains itself.
You didn't like Longlegs?
I liked it, I just didn't love it. Okay. It just, you get to the third act and it just starts showing you too much, saying too much, explaining too much. I'm just sitting there going, what? None of this makes sense.
Yeah.
And not all horrors have to make sense, but the internal logic has to stand up.
Yeah.
So it was a bit too, it just fell apart. It collapses in on itself. But I will say, Hunter Schafer is a superstar. Wasn't familiar with her work before. Mm-hmm. I think she's in Euphoria, which I haven't watched. Mm-hmm. She is just wonderful here. Commanding, charismatic. Looking forward to seeing what she does next. And Dan Stevens, it gets an extra star for Dan Stevens.
Okay.
I think there should be a category now, the Dan Stevens horror category. Abigail, you can throw in. The guest, he is on a roll.
Yeah.
Forget Downton Abbey.
If you see one movie where Dan Stevens speaks German this week, make sure it's Cuckoo. Tell me this, what stars are you going to give for Cuckoo?
We'll go, you know what? It's a 2-star film that Dan Stevens turns into a 3-1.
Okay. And that's on limited enough release or a general release?
Oh, it's actually getting a general release nationwide, yeah.
En route to our last showbiz story, Dean, those two beers, the Whiplash and the Rascals, the West Coast IPA and the East Coast IPA, in lots of beer shops?
Yeah, a little bit easier to get them in Dublin, but the online shops as well. So Carryout on Turlestown have a good online offerings for Malloy's and with the beer club. Malloy's have their own online. Carryout is the beer club, and you'll get them through that if you can't get them.
Okay, very good. Aisling, it ends with us. What's going on? We keep hearing about this for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, it's kind of been the gift that keeps on giving in terms of drama. It's been in the news for weeks.
Just for people who don't know, this is a movie.
Yes, it is a movie. The person you might know best in it is Blake Lively. She plays Lily Bloom, who's the lead character. It's based on a book of the same name, the cover of which I am sure you've seen. It's all pink and purple. It was massive last year, or a couple, even 2 years ago, mainly because it went viral on BookTok, which is kind of the book area of TikTok. I read the book and really didn't like it, so I haven't seen the film yet. But there's all sorts of drama between Blake Lively and her co-star, Justin Baldoni. He's also the director of the film. There's rumours that he made her feel uncomfortable on set. Then there's stuff about her kind of overshadowing him in post-production and saying, I want this shot and this shot because I look better in this. People are also giving out about her online because she's been kind of like plugging her own brands in on the press tour rather than kind of focusing on the darker subject matter of the film, which is domestic violence, and kind of talking about that and using that platform for that. Others would argue, you know, her male co-stars aren't being put under the same scrutiny for not speaking about the domestic violence issue. But it all kind of came to a head this week when one of the other cast members, Brandon Sklenar, he actually shared a lengthy Instagram post kind of addressing all the drama and kind of defending mainly the female members of the cast and Colleen Hoover, who wrote the book. And he said, what may or may not have happened behind the scenes does not and hopefully should not detract from what our intentions were in making this film. I think the film's a bit meh either way, but people are constantly talking about it, so it can't be a bad thing.
It's a strange one. In 5 seconds, did you like that movie?
I forgot all about it while I was watching.
Okay, excellent. I have been talking to Dean McGuinness. I've been talking to Chris Washer and Aisling Bonner. Chris, I'm going to end with a text on you because we badmouthed you for putting lime in your lager or whatever. I used to put lime in my lager when I lived in London 36 years ago because the lager tasted absolutely rank. Not anymore when you can have IPAs from even the west coast of Ireland. That is it for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.